The NFL Combine wraps up on Monday with one last day of on-field workouts. It wraps up a week-long event during which we heard from Green Bay Packers head coach Mike McCarthy and general manager Ted Thompson. We'll talk to Ron Clements of the Sporting News to get his impressions here on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking about the NFL Combine here on a Monday morning, last day of workouts with the defensive backs hitting the field. To talk about the NFL Combine, we have a guest joining us on the show this morning. We have Ron Clements of the Sporting News. Ron, first of all, congratulations on your new gig with the Sporting News.
Thanks. A little over 2 months ago now.
That's great for you to join them. I think it gives you a nice new platform, and glad to see your writing over there. But let's talk Combine here, Ron. You were there in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium this past weekend. It was good to see you there.
You as well.
Could you clue our listeners into your connection to Wisconsin? Because even though you don't cover the Packers beat or anything, you do have ties to the state.
I grew up in La Crosse. I'm a graduate of Aquinas High School in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
So
I like to tell people I grew up on a dairy farm in Wisconsin, and that's true.
Were you a Packers fan growing up?
I'm still a Packers fan. I've been covering the NFL for 6 years now, but I don't think you ever. I don't think that ever leaves you.
Yeah, I mean, do you find it tough sometimes being a fan and still, you know, being objective as part of the media?
Not really. When you're working, you're working. When you're sitting on your couch, you're yelling at the TV.
Okay, so at the Combine, you were there when Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson spoke this past weekend. They answered a lot of questions about upcoming free agency, the period coming up. Is there any doubts guys like Randall Cobb and Brian Bulaga don't come back to Green Bay?
You hope they come back, especially Cobb. I just don't know if that $9 million the $9 million that he wants is going to be too much, because they've got other guys. Tremont Williams, Devon House are both free agents. Of course, Bulaga. Thompson said that when I actually asked him specifically about Randall Cobb, and he said, we want to re-sign all our free agents. But Ted Thompson gives the best non-answers of anybody in the business. I mean, that guy's entertaining without saying anything. He should really run for office.
He would be a good politician.
Yeah. I think Cobb's got to be the priority in free agency. And then you go maybe with one of the corners. I don't think you want to lose both of your starting corners. Bulaga's been hurt, so the Packers know how to play without him. So I would probably put him third on the pecking order, and then whether you like Williams over House or House over Williams, they're 2-4. So that's probably how, if I were Ted Thompson, that's probably how I would look at it.
Interesting. Because I think Brian Bulaga is a higher priority than the cornerbacks personally. I mean, not that my opinion's any more or less valid than yours, but I mean, if a guy like Bulaga weren't to come back, then does offensive tackle kind of become a need in Green Bay?
I think it still is a need, regardless of whether they sign Bulaga, because like I said, he's been hurt, so I don't think he's played a 16 game season yet. You got to have somebody to plug in there. Derek Sherrod was a mess when they tried to put him in there, and he was a first round pick. So you can't swing and miss on another first round pick at tackle. So I doubt if they go tackle in the first round, because there are really only like two positions in this draft that aren't deep. Quarterback's one of them. The Packers don't have a need at quarterback, really. And the other one's tight end. And that's where the Packers actually could pick up a guy. And if that's Max Williams at the end of the first round, who is hands down, he's the best tight end in the draft class.
Mm-hmm.
You could get him at 30. Other than that, later on, he's not necessarily rated the second highest on all the draft boards, but a guy who I really like is Nick Boyle from Delaware. I think he could be a fourth, fifth round steal at tight end. He's 6'4", 265 pounds, and he's got, at the Senior Bowl, he showed he has really good hands and surprisingly good athleticism for a guy his size. He was hurdling guys at the Senior Bowl, but his hands, he was catching everything that came around him. And at Delaware and at the Senior Bowl, he showed that he's a pretty darn good blocker too. So, if it's a fourth round there and, started day three of the draft and the Packers haven't taken the tight end, I'd be hooting and hollering for Nick Boyle if I'm a Packers fan. Because Anthony Corliss and Richard Rodgers, especially Rodgers came on late last year to play really well. But I just don't think, they're not Rob Gronkowski. They're not Jimmy Graham. I'm not saying Nick Boyle is that.
Mm-hmm.
I do think Nick Boyle can be an upgrade over either of those two guys, or just push them and all three of them make each other better.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I'm a big Nick Boyle fan too, and I think the fact that you've got a guy like Eddie Lacy in Green Bay and Nick Boyle can block for him, perhaps be the best blocking tight end on the roster, that's a real big threat.
Yeah, because and that's one, Rodgers is a pretty good blocker, Richard Rodgers I'm talking about, of course, but Anthony Corliss is more of that receiving tight end.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, to add a guy on the line, bring him in who can block. I think Nick Boyle might be the most underrated, one of the most underrated players in the draft, and easily the most underrated player on tight end. I mean, I'm looking at Mike Mayock, top five at the position, and he's not in there. He's got Ben Koyak at number five from Notre Dame, but Mike Mayock does Notre Dame football games. Ben Koyak was a disaster at the I forget which bowl, All-Star game he was in, but he was a disaster there. It was either the Senior Bowl or the East-West game.
You mentioned, I want to get back to a little free agency talk here for a moment first. You mentioned the cornerbacks, Williams and House, and I want to know which one would you prefer, because Williams is getting to be 32 years old. House is looking to become a starter in the NFL. He's a little bit younger. Which do you prefer of the two, the experienced guy or the potential guy, I guess?
You probably prioritize the younger guy. But both have been wildly inconsistent. and Sam Shields too is right there as a guy. He's not entering free agency, but he's a guy who's just been inconsistent. And that's probably the most frustrating thing with the Packers is the inconsistent play at cornerback. Sometimes these guys make plays and you're like, oh wow, that was awesome. And other times you're yelling and cursing at the TV because, mm-hmm. You wonder how they miss that. How do you not turn and look for the ball? How do you not go up and get that? How do you miss that tackle on the outside? All three of those players have shown flashes of being great, but none of them have lived up to that. I think Shields and House, if those are the two that the Packers go with, could be serviceable, but could always use an upgrade. And competition at the position, it's one thing that can never be underrated.
Yep.
You got guys pushing each other to make each other better. And there are some pretty good corners in the draft. It's not as good. This draft class is not as good as it was last year. And I'll be honest, I'm not sure as far as free agency, like who on other teams is going to be available, so like who the Packers could target. Corner is pretty deep, but there's only like one top flight corner and in the draft, and that's Trey Waynes from Michigan State. DJ Williams from Florida State is another decent guy. But the Packers, they don't seem to have a lot of luck with Florida State guys. Leroy Butler with the exception. A guy who could, if the Packers want to redshirt a corner for a year, the kid from Oregon is the best of the group. He got hurt right before the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl.
Ifo Ekpreolamu.
Yeah. Thank you, because I did not want to pronounce his name. he's easily the best corner of the group. I mean, that guy is excellent. And because of the injury, he's a day two guy. Somewhere in the second round, he might even slip to the third. I doubt that because of his upside. But if he can come back healthy from that knee injury, he's a starter in the NFL and a future Pro Bowler.
Okay, kind of sticking here with the defensive discussion. Were you surprised this past week when the Packers released Brad Jones?
I collapsed when the Packers released Brad Jones. I've never been a Brad Jones guy. He's another guy who had a couple good games here and there, but overall, his overall body of work has been just terrible. He's out of position. He was late getting to the ball. I'm surprised the Vikings haven't claimed him off waivers yet, because that's what they do. They just pick up former Packers. So with the release of Brad Jones, and then you've got AJ Hawk, getting up there. Hawk probably had his worst year of his career last year. And not to say that he played poorly, but just, not the AJ Hawk of 2010, 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And inside linebacker, if you want to talk draft and guys who are at the combine, that's a pretty good position. Denzel Perryman from Miami, I don't think Perryman will be there when the Packers draft at 30.
Okay.
That's the thing about drafting 30th. You get 29 teams ahead of you. And, 28, I guess, this year, because the Browns have 12 and 19. But, you've got all these teams ahead of you. So, you got to wait to see who's going to fall to you. If Perryman falls to the Packers at 30, that they better turn that card in, right on the, within seconds.
Agree, but anyway, go on.
I think Perryman's probably, he's a top 20 pick.
Okay.
He he did pretty well yesterday at the combine, doing the on field stuff. But, Clemson Stefani, Anthony is a guy who I like kind of like in the, on day two.
Mm-hmm.
And he might even dip to I doubt if he goes into the fourth round, but, he's a guy, he's 6'3", 245, and he ran a 4.5 40, and, even more impressive, he had a 4 second 20 yard shuttle, 37 inch vertical. The guy's got some pretty good athleticism. He could definitely improve as a tackler, and I realize Packer fans are going like, oh no, not another guy who can't tackle, because that has been an issue with the Packers.
Yep.
I think Stephon Anthony, is a guy who on day two, you could get and plug in as a starter. And, with the inside linebacker, you just don't know how good Sam Barrington is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who was a seventh round pick last year,
mm-hmm.
and ended up being a starter by the end of the season.
Yep.
And you hope that he can continue to build on that and be, a Pro Bowler someday. But I don't think you want to put all your eggs in the basket of a seventh-round draft pick in his second season in the NFL. So inside linebacker is definitely, especially with the release of Brad Jones, that's a need. And I think the Packers kind of said, hey, we're going to be looking at inside linebacker when they cut Brad Jones.
You mentioned all these guys, Denzel Perryman, Stephon Anthony, another guy yesterday who kind of caught attention for the wrong reasons, Paul Dawson of TCU, ran a surprisingly slow 4.93 40-yard dash. And I guess that kind of brings up the question, how much stock can you put into a 40-yard dash? Because, I mean, you look at the film on a guy like Paul Dawson, he looks like he can play.
Yeah, and you're right. And the NFL editor at Sporting News actually did something on Dawson. You know, and yeah, he was a monster at TCU, and he was one of the better players on a TCU over the last 4 years for a TCU defense that's perennially one of the best in the country.
Mm-hmm.
That's what TCU does. They play good defense year in. And you're out. The Horned Frogs are going to be in the top 10 of total defensive rankings.
Mm-hmm.
They're like Alabama. They're like Wisconsin in that regard. I'll say this. Stephon Anthony played on the nation's number one defense last year. I think Wisconsin was number two. Or actually, you know what? I think Wisconsin slipped more than one spot after that Ohio State game. Which
they might have.
Which I unfortunately was in attendance for.
Oh man!
But no, Dawson. You know, the tape is the first thing that guys look at. I think it was Kevin Colbert on Wednesday, the Pittsburgh Steelers general manager, who said that by the time you get to the combine, the evaluation process is 90% done,
mm-hmm.
and so. The on-field drills and all the measurables and whatnot, that's just icing on the cake. And those were his words.
Mm-hmm.
So the majority of the stock is on-field tape. But you know, you say that, let's rewind 1 year. Michael Sam, on tape at Missouri, SEC Defensive Player of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a bunch of sacks. But he goes he gets drafted in the seventh round. I think the Rams just were trying to make Mizzou fans happy there in St. Louis. So the Rams take a flyer on him in the seventh round. He doesn't make the team. He goes to the Cowboys where he's on the practice squad for a few weeks and then gets cut. And nobody ever picks him up. And he's a guy, you would never think that the defensive player of the year from Missouri, from the SEC, couldn't play in the NFL, but that's exactly what's going on with Michael Sam. And I think the combine last year was very telling with Michael Sam's athleticism because he was bad. He was really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then he really didn't help himself much at the Mizzou Pro Day either because he improved some, but not a lot.
Yeah.
But that said, I don't think Paul Dawson is Michael Sam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is more athletic and Dawson has a defined position. That was the problem with Michael Sam. They didn't know where to play him, defensive end or outside linebacker. Paul Dawson is without a doubt an inside linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
You'd like for him to be a little taller. He's only 6 feet tall. You know, ideally, inside linebacker, 6'2"-ish. But you can. I think Dawson could relate to a guy like Chris Borland, who, you know, doesn't put up the great measurables, but yet is one heck of a football player.
Yep.
And Borland last year for the Niners, and I still kind of hurts that the Packers weren't able to get him, especially because later they ended up getting Jared Everett-Harris. But Chris Borland was right. He was right there with Aaron Donald last year as, you know, one of the competitors for Defensive Rookie of the Year until Borland got hurt late in the year.
Mm-hmm.
And if Paul Dawson can be that type of player in the NFL, like Chris Borland was before he got hurt, then yeah, I mean, he is, I mean, the tape doesn't lie. So I think if Green Bay could get a guy like that second, third round, or maybe even late in the first, I don't know where he's going to go because of the combine. I think he can improve his stock and maybe get back into the first round if he has a good pro day. But if, if the Packers can get him in the second round, like late in the second round, like they got Eddie Lacy, it could be a steal. Because, like you said, the tape is very telling. He's a good football player. He just didn't have the great athletic measurables at the combine. But neither did Chris Borland.
Yeah, exactly. Last thing here, Ron, before I let you go. Just what stood out to you at the combine? Were there any workouts? Or, I mean, you were there conducting interviews with players, general managers. I mean, is there a story you can share? Or just anything that sticks out to you over the course of the past few days in Indianapolis?
I'll bring up another linebacker who is a pretty darn good player, Lorenzo Malden from Louisville. I covered the Belt Bowl down here, Louisville and Georgia.
Okay.
And Georgia got their butts, Louisville got its butt kicked by Georgia. Nick Chubb just ran all over him. Mm-hmm. But during the bowl week, the players had a ride along at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. They did the Richard Petty driving experience. And it was pretty funny seeing, 300 pound kids trying to get in and out of these, stock cars through the window,
because
you got to go in Dukes of Hazzard style. Those doors don't open. But Malden, when he was a freshman, Louisville was in the Belt Bowl, and so he did that as a freshman, and he didn't want to do it as a senior. So he's just sitting there watching.
Okay.
And that's when I first met him. I started chatting him up and talked to him and. So anyway, fast forward, I see him at the combine on Friday, and somebody asked him about his upbringing, and Lorenzo Malden is a guy who he had a terrible home life. His dad wasn't really around. His mom was an alcoholic. He ended up being put in the foster system. Lived in 16 different homes before he was 18.
Wow.
And he was primarily raised by women, so he's just got this utmost respect for women. He actually called himself a feminist, and which I thought was kind of funny, but yet it's understandable with a guy like him, and with all the troubles the NFL had with violence against women last year with Greg Hardy and Ray Rice and mm-hmm. Ray McDonald, and Malden said he would love to be like an advocate against or speaking out against domestic violence, because he's got just the such a profound respect for women. So if you want a pretty good football player who you are going to have absolutely zero concerns about off the field and probably become a fan favorite, plus he can play inside linebacker, Lorenzo Malden would be that guy that I think whichever team gets him, fans are going to love him, because he's just such a good guy.
That's cool. I didn't know that about him, so I learned something today, that's for sure. You think he can play inside? I know he was an outside guy.
Yeah, he was, but and usually, you put the more athletic guys outside.
Mm-hmm.
But in a 3-4, I think Malden could play either side in a 3-4 defense, because he's not quite athletic enough to play a 3-4 outside backer, but and I think in a 4-3 he's probably a weak side linebacker.
Okay.
But in a 3-4 he can definitely play alongside Barrington or whoever else is there and play pretty well.
Interesting. I learned something new, definitely. Ron, I appreciate your time. I've already kept you longer than I told you I would, so appreciate you taking the time to talk to us this morning, and let's do it again sometime.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Brian.
All right, take care. Ron Clements of the Sporting News joining us here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Monday morning as the NFL Combine wraps up today. Defensive backs working out first. It's time for... Let's try this over once again. It is time for the
Packers News of the Day.
There we go. Packers News of the Day. Kind of recapping what happened over the course of the past week. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate it that your patience. This is the first episode of Railbird Central in a week because I was gone at the combine and couldn't do any episodes while I was there. On Friday, the Packers released Brad Jones, and the other news, which we already kind of talked about on the show, but the other news at the inside linebacker position, A.J. Hogg, it was learned that he had postseason surgery on his ankle. They removed bone spurs from his ankle. This report coming from Rob Domofsky of ESPN.com. So kind of two items of news with the Packers inside linebacker position. And, you know, of course it plays into the whole, you know, need-based draft needs, whatever, with the NFL Combine taking place and, you know, guys the Packers are looking at and all that. But the comment I wanted to, throw out there about this is, and I did mention this on the blog at Cheesehead TV, if you go look at the news from this past Friday, it kind of perhaps surprising that I think maybe some people thought, well, these guys would be released at the same time. Isn't it inevitable that the Packers release both A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones? Because they clear up $3.75 million by releasing Brad Jones on their 2015 salary cap. And they would, the Packers would gain $3.5 million on their 2015 salary cap if they were to release A.J. Hawk as well. So why didn't this happen? I mean, why didn't they just do this in one fell swoop? Because in a way, it's kind of negative news. It's like you release a guy who didn't really work out for you, and the Packers do this at, 4 o'clock on a Friday when, the news cycle, people go home for the weekend. They do that on purpose, of course, if you don't know. I mean, they want these things getting as little attention as possible. And now if they end up releasing A.J. Hawk down the road, I mean, it's only kind of another negative story out there, a guy who didn't really live up to his contract per se. Not to say that A.J. Hawk was the worst player that has ever donned a Packers uniform. But just a guy who definitely is the athleticism has gone, southward, the further his career has gone. And I agree that the Packers, I think they should release him at some point, but I mean, this brings up a thought in the back of your mind. Is it perhaps inevitable? A.J. Hawk is a guy who's already taken basically two pay cuts in his career. He took one, what was it, just two seasons ago, I believe. And then one after, I think it was after the Super Bowl season, right? He was cut right at the end of the Super Bowl season and then re-signed the next day to a more, lesser money because he was getting big-time money as a first-round draft pick back, pre-2011 CBA. Is it inevitable that A.J. Hawk restructures his deal once again and comes back yet for another season in Green Bay? Is that what they're looking at? Or is it just a situation? And I really don't know the answer to this. I mean, can they not release him because he had this postseason surgery? Would they owe him money because of that? I don't know what the answer is. I would assume they don't. It's not like he went on injured reserve or anything like that. All I know is also he's got these bonuses that kick in during the 2015 season. And this is important, the date of the – he has both a roster bonus and a workout bonus. And these things are due by certain dates. If he's on the roster by such and such date, he'll be owed – I think it's something like $800,000. So, almost $1 million. And the workout bonus is a little bit less. But, I mean, these things usually typically kick in during the, early in the league year, particularly the workout bonuses, that happen during April, May time frame. If he's on the roster by that time, he's owed this money. Roster bonuses can happen at different times. Roster bonuses, like some of them are there if you're on the roster the first day of the league year, you're owed that money. Sometimes it's like if you're on the opening day roster, you're owed this money. It all depends how it's negotiated. I don't know the dates for these things, but I mean, the Packers would have to release Hawk before such and such date to have to avoid owing him this money, you know, which would then count on the 2015 salary cap. So, you know, it's just an interesting debate here. What's going on? I know, you know, Domofsky has done further reporting at the NFL Combine saying, you know, the Packers haven't talked to A.J. Hawk about releasing him. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean much. I mean, because there is no, you know, immediate deadline. You know, there would be no difference releasing him today or the day before the new league year started on March 9th. I mean, there really would be no difference. I mean, there's no incentive for the Packers to release him now as opposed from 2 weeks from now. So it can get done. It's just a question of why didn't it already? Why did they release AJ, you know, Brad Jones and not AJ Hawk? It's just a curious question. I don't really have the answer to, but I wanted to throw it out there. I think it can spur a little bit of talk and debate, which they are doing on the live blog here. I see on our chat. But also, what's next here?
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers here on a Monday, like I said before, it's the last day of the NFL Combine. Cornerbacks and safeties work out today. Defensive backs, last group. Every group, every other player has already left Indianapolis. It's, you know, this is the seventh of 7 days of the NFL Combine. It's a long process. You can imagine even NFL teams at this point are, you know, they're ready to go home. And perhaps, you know, maybe a lot of the personnel is. It's just the people who perhaps, you know, focus on the defensive backs who are staying there as long as today to watch these guys work out, etc. But you know, I do think it's important for the Packers because, you know, we brought this up with Ron Clements. Packers have two guys, well, three guys really, who are set to become free agents at the cornerback position. If, you know, we're talking to Bonhouse, Tremont Williams, and Jarrett Bush. And you don't know what's going to happen with these guys. I really don't. I mean, this is the one position on the roster where I'm really not sure what happens with the Green Bay Packers. That, you know, me personally, I think Randall Cobb and Brian Bulaga are priorities A and B for the Packers. And then, you don't even begin negotiations with Devonhouse or Tremont Williams until you get these guys done because you don't know how much money's going to be left over. So, I think that it can be tough. I don't know how patient Devonhouse and Tremont Williams are going to be with the Packers. You know, if they're sitting there negotiating with Cobb and Bulaga, are these guys going to stick around? I know Devonhouse in particular, he's going to look to be a starter somewhere in the NFL. And if there's a team out there that thinks he could be a starter for them, I don't think he's going to hesitate to go there. Now, it could be in Green Bay if the Packers decide not to sign Tremont Williams. You know, it could be a case where the Packers decide to let the 32-year-old go and try to sign Devonhouse. You know, heck, if Devonhouse simply wanted a little bit of security and accept a little less money, that could be a way of a deal getting done a little bit earlier if he wanted to do that. But I don't know how much, you know, Devonhouse is going to hold out for. So, I mean, the point being here is that, you know, it's possible both these guys end up leaving and the Packers have to pay attention to what's going on with the cornerback position. I think, you know, the good thing for the Packers is in 2014, they had some depth at cornerback, which is good. You know, it's maybe not, you know, elite players or whatever, but I mean, you've got last year, House, Williams, Jarrett Bush, and then on top of that, the guys who are coming back under contract, Sam Shields, Casey Hayward, Micah Hyde, Dimitri Goodson. I think the Packers are in pretty good shape with kind of their slot cornerback guys who are pretty young. In other words, Casey Hayward and Micah Hyde. I think if you're going to look at anybody today, if you're watching the NFL Combine, it's going on as we speak. They're probably running 40-yard dashes right now. I know they were just before we came on air here. You're going to look for the perimeter cornerbacks, the guys with the long speed who could be good players out there. So I think those are the guys you're going to want to watch today, the perimeter cornerbacks that the Packers could be looking, should both Devon House and Tremont Williams leave Green Bay. Could be a position they address. It could be early in the draft should they lose both of them. Wouldn't surprise me. Honest to goodness, if both House and Williams were to leave Green Bay, it wouldn't surprise me if the Packers grabbed a first-round cornerback. I'm not guaranteeing it by any means, but I mean, there's a lot to play out here. Obviously, we're going to let free agency play out first before we get to that point. But just throwing it out there, that quarterback could be a little bit bigger need than meets the eye as it stands right now. So keep an eye on the cornerbacks and particularly the perimeter cornerbacks out there. And just kind of one last thing here that I want to do today here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central. You know, of course, I was out there at the Combine for 4 days conducting interviews and whatnot, and wanted to share a little bit some interviews that you have with prospects. And I just thought here's an interesting one that I can kind of, you know, leave the show with today. This guy's a first-round talent, Marcus Peters of Washington. Perhaps you've heard of him. First-round talent, but he got kicked off the team at Washington. Had some rather big-time disagreements with the coaches. I thought, you know, he actually took responsibility for his actions, kind of said it was his fault, and, you know, seemed sincere when he talked at the Combine and things like that. I mean, it means very little, though. You've seen guys in the past who, you know, say all the right things, but then, don't end up doing the right thing in the long run. But regardless, I mean, this is the only thing we can go by is his word at this point. So, you know, here is the interview with Marcus Peters from the NFL Combine. So listen in here.
Let's get it out the way. What's the message that you're delivering to the personnel people? What do you want them to understand about you?
You know, that I just learned from my mistakes. You know, I made some immature decisions at the University of Washington. You know, it hurt me truly, you know. So I just got to learn from my mistakes and I grow from them.
What makes you the best corner in this draft?
You know, the coaches, they make that decision, you know. But, you know, I bring a shutdown mentality to the game. You know, I'm a ball hawk. You know, I'm a team player, you know.
You're going to be participating at the Washington Pro Day, is that correct?
Yes, sir. It's on April 2nd.
You
recently went up there a couple of weeks ago and had a real good conversation with Coach Peterson. You know, we sat down and we talked about everything that happened. You know, I sincerely apologize to him again for what I put him and the team through throughout the past through this year. But, you know, it was a good conversation, you know, and he welcomed me into the pro day.
Did you reach out to him or did he reach out?
It was a mutual thing. I had to go up to Europe to Seattle to take care of a traffic violation, you know. And I while I was up there, I just stopped by the school, you know, to say hello to the coaching staff and my teammates. False.
What was the problem between you two?
Just miscommunication, you know, mostly on my behalf. You know, I didn't take the coaching transition too well.
Your teammates have really been.
Mm-hmm.
How's that feel for you?
That's excellent. You know, I really think in my heart that I'm a real, real good teammate. You know, I'm a leader within me, just going out there and letting my soul speak for everything. You know, I'm not so much vocal. You know, but on everything else, I just go out there and I bring everything to the table for my teammates. I'm doing it for so we can all be successful with it.
You're training at EXO, Shelton, and Shaq. Brent Callaway,
yeah.
He said that you're the first in, and you have no hesitation mm-hmm. asking them to push you more, give you different things that,
yeah.
that you might need. Can you talk about the comfort of being able to train with your teammates and some of the things that Exos is doing?
Yeah, you know, it's an excellent thing for me to be able to be back with some of my teammates, especially Shaq and Danny. You know, we was one of the some of the top guys on defense, you know, and me and Danny came in together as freshmen. You know, so we talked about, we reminisce all the time about what has happened, you know. But it's just like they told me, you know, you was dearly missed by the team. You know, you made some mistakes, but you know, just move on, bro. I went back home and spent some time and enjoyed my family. You know, during the season, I had a son, you know, so and I went back home and I just enjoyed my time with my son.
What do teams want to know from you in the
valley? You know, everybody want to know the character, you know. Am I a hothead, you know, which is false, you know. I made some immature decisions, and I live from them, and I learn from them, you know, and I grow as a man.
Marcus, there was a report that you tweeted your teammates, the defensive assignments, the week before you were. Is that true?
Yes, sir. You know, some of the younger guys on the team, they reached out. You know, they asked about some of the assignments. You know, when I prided myself on to be able to know all the assignments in the back in the secondary when I was there at University of Washington. You know, and they just wanted to get some insights up.
Was that hard for you to do?
Not at all. You know, when someone needs help, you know, I'm always there to help.
Why didn't you be the first corner taken? What would that mean
to you? I don't make that decision. You know. But I'm going to go out there on Monday. You know, I'm going to give him my best foot. You know, and I let the coaches and the GMs make that decision. You got to speak up and you got to man up to what has happened. You know, you got to take fully ownership for what has happened. You know, it was hard at first. You know, for me to go back to New Zealand, a high school coach at my high school. McClymont High School in Oakland. You know, I went back and I went in to actually talk to my high school team, you know, explaining them what has happened, you know, because we have some guys that's going off to the college level next year. You know, just explain to them what has happened, you know, and I learned from it and I'm mature.
Marcus, there's another guy from Oakland, pretty popular, Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
He's taken to you. What's some of the things that he's told you throughout this process? I mean, obviously he has an interesting interaction with
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
You're very open. What's some of the mm-hmm. things that he said to you?
That's personal. You know, we keep them personal. That's someone that has mentored me throughout my whole life. I look up to him. Look up to him a lot. You know, he's a great open citizen, and you know that. But every conversation that has happened between us stays personal.
How'd you meet him?
Hmm?
How'd you meet him?
I've been knowing him my whole life. I watched him grow up playing Pop Warner football. I watched him in high school. And I watched him through college, and I got a chance to go see, play in Washington, and he played in Seattle. So, yeah.
Teams ask about that issue with the teams, like how detailed are you, and what do you tell them as far as steps you've taken mm-hmm. to avoid something like this happening before?
You know, like I live and I learn from it. You know, it's going to be some things that isn't going to go right. You know, but I have went through one of the worst things that can happen to me in life. You know, I got kicked off my team. I wasn't able to finish off my college career with my teammates. You know, and I own up to that and I man up to that and I just move forward.
So there you go. Marcus Peters, formerly of the University of Washington, a potential first-round draft choice. On talent alone, he's probably a first-round draft choice, but talking about a lot of things, from getting kicked off the team to reconciling with the coaching staff at Washington, and even his relationship with Marshawn Lynch, both of them coming from Oakland. So there you have it. Take it for what you will. I'm not sure the Packers, even if they do need a cornerback, let's say Devon House and Tremont Williams both depart Green Bay, just hypothetically, I'm not sure the Packers can invest a first-round draft choice in a guy like Marcus Peters. Not in the first round. Maybe later you do, but that's my two cents for what it's worth. But anyway, thank you, everybody, so much for joining us here on a Monday morning at Cheesehead TV, the last day of the NFL Combine as we kind of wrap things up. We'll have one last kind of Combine wrap-up on Wednesday as well. Hopefully I'll be able to share some more audio with the prospects with you, things like that. So we'll talk about that then. Thanks to Ron Clements for joining the show today. I appreciate him taking the time to join us here. And thank you. We'll talk to you later, folks. Again on Wednesday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, here at Cheesehead TV. On behalf of everybody else, I'm Brian Kirvu. We'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Kidney in a Cooler by Keller Williams on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.